This is the Driving Eureka podcast, episode 39. In this episode, neuroscience research and creativity are discussed. Let's go! The Driving Eureka podcast with Doug Hall and Trip Babbitt is sponsored by the Eureka Ranch. The ranch specializes in helping companies find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, and this week, Doug Hall is decidedly off the grid. So I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about neuroscience and creativity. And I wanted to hit upon the subject because I do a podcast called Mind Your Noodles, which is how do we apply neuroscience and some of the research and application that's going on that has really advanced over the last 10 years to build a brain-friendly organization. And I thought, well, I could do one podcast episode and leverage it both for the Driving Eureka podcast as well as my Mind Your Noodles podcast that I do. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do it on. I started with maybe criteria for coming up with what consulting firm you might use for innovation. I looked at how culture affects innovation. And I finally decided that some of the research that's been done in neuroscience and creativity in the last 18 months, so this is relatively new research, was interesting enough to do an episode on. So let's start. There's a couple of research studies that have been done that I found fascinating. And one of them involved 163 subjects. And they were using what's called a functional magnetic resonance imaging system, which basically detects the changes in your blood flow in your brain. And this has some flaws associated with an fMRI, but the advances in use of it have been improving as time goes by. And one of the things that they did in this research with these 163 subjects was they would give the subjects an object, and it's an everyday thing like a knife, a brick, a rope were three of the things that they used. And they would give the person 12 seconds to come up with a creative idea for it. And the creative types they found were engaging three distinct brain networks that are what they now say are networks that are key to creative thinking. So there's one called the default network, which is really no activity in your brain. It brainstorming and daydreaming, that type of thing, where the neurons are firing very low in that particular network. There's one called the executive control network, which has to do with focus, which is kind of the opposite of the default network. And then there's one called the salience network, which detects things. You know, what things are you going to notice and what things are you not going to notice in the environment? And also helps in switching between this executive where you're really focused and this default network where your brain is just kind of inactive. Normally, these three networks don't function together. But for people who are very creative, they seem to work together fairly well, that we're able to come up with more ideas in this 12 seconds of looking at a particular object and coming up with other uses for it. So a creative person is able to engage these three different networks effectively and efficiently. Now, here's an interesting thing, and if you all think that Doug Hall's a little nuts, and you think it might be associated with the whiskey company he has. Well, this additional study kind of describes Doug and some of the things. So one of the things that they found in these studies of these three networks is that it's a combination of genetics and experience. But here's the thing I found pretty fascinating, and Doug would probably laugh at this, but people with bipolar or are schizophrenic or have other neuropsychiatric illnesses tend to be more creative. So I thought, that fits Doug to a T. The ability to move between these three networks has shown to be in the genetics. Now here's some other findings about these three networks. Children can become more creative by just watching someone be creative, watching a fantasy film, having unstructured play can give children new insights, analytical thinking, and greater creativity. But this isn't just for children. Having habits like writing new ideas down, trying new things, regular study of unfamiliar subjects, all can foster creativity. Now, in my Mind Your Noodles podcast, I also talk about other things that affect the brain. So if you're getting enough sleep, that helps in your creativity. If you're spending time outdoors, and Doug talked in an earlier episode of The Science of Innovation about light and all of those types of things increasing creativity. So spending time outdoors in the sun, having all those types of things stimulates your ability to be creative. Well, and just having sessions on a regular basis for creating new ideas. Now, interestingly, some of the conclusions from some of the researchers that creativity does require some effort and method, a way of going about doing it, enhances your ability to be able to be more creative. And that's one of the things that, with regards to the innovation engineering system, an end-to-end system, it puts a method in for you to be able to be creative. One other note that I made on some of the research was always having something to do actually reduces creativity. Creative types should welcome boredom and reduce multitasking. This engages your creative networks. In another study, there were 185 participants, and they were looking into two traits that are often looked at together, and that is openness and intellect. So one of the things they look for is the thickness of your cerebral cortex. Now, the cerebral cortex is this thin layer of the brain that basically covers the outer portion. It's about 1.5 to 5 millimeters, and it covers the cerebrum. Now, the function of the cerebral cortex is basically determining intelligence, determining your personality, your motor function, planning an organization, touch sensation, processing sensory information, and language processing. And the belief was that you would have a thick cerebral cortex, you know, if you were more open and intellectual. But the research found, when they looked at these separately, that there was no correlation between the cerebral cortex thickness and intelligence. And with regards to openness, there was a negative correlation between the thickness of the cerebral cortex and openness, meaning it wasn't thicker. So the results support a theory of creativity. Now, we got to remember a theory. That doesn't mean theory is never proven. They're finding with some of the research that they're doing that it supports a theory of what's called cognitive disinhibition. And that means basically creativity is a result of reduced control over your thoughts. Now, this concept of cognitive disinhibition is something that it's kind of funny. we think of Donald Trump calling himself a stable genius. Well, there was an article that I read while I was researching this that basically said, if you think you're a genius, you're crazy. So it was an oxymoron to be a stable genius. But let's just take cognitive disinhibition as having people with a screw loose or some degree of eccentricity. Now, some people dispute this, and they have two basically pieces of evidence that they point to, and that the number of creative geniuses in the entire history of civilization is very large. And the second reason that they point to as evidence is that permanent inhabitants of mental asylums do not usually produce creative masterworks. However, the research suggests that there is a connection between madness and creativity, and creative genius or cognitive disinhibition is really the tendency to pay attention to things that normally should be ignored or filtered out by attention because they appear irrelevant. And that operational definition came from a Dr. S.H. Carson. So as I did this research, almost all of the research that I read, and the people theoretically did say this, that yes, there is some degree of genetics, there's some degree of experience that goes into being creative, but that it can be learned. It's something that you can get better at. And so I've identified some things from my reading that can increase your creativity. And here's nine of them. Observation skills, getting better at observing what's going around in your environment. Changing your environment is number two. The third thing is by walking or doing some type of exercise, this improves your brain function and increases your creativity. Being more curious and being intentional about it. Number five, dream without limitations and set aside time to do it. Six, customer in thinking. So design thinking is one of those things where you have empathy for the customer, but just putting yourself in the place of someone else can stimulate your creativity. You can practice creating as number seven by doing it, again, intentionally. Eight, read or watch fiction. I used to never read any fiction just because I thought it was kind of pointless. But reading or watching fiction can actually help improve your creativity. And then the ninth thing is something I did talk about with a lady by the name of Annie LaCroix in an episode where we were talking about stress and exercise and sleep. But is mindfulness, and that's really a way to teach your brain to stay in the moment. And there's a whole series of toxic things that can happen in your brain when you're stuck in the past or maybe spending too much time in the future. But it's a way to get you in the moment. So those are there's some research for being more creative. Hopefully it's something useful to you. And we'll look to see if Doug comes out of hiding next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the Driving Eureka podcast. This podcast is part of the Innovation Engineering Institute. Innovation engineering is a new field of academic study and leadership science. Its mission is to change the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day, resulting in increased speed and decreased risk. To learn more about on-campus, off-campus, live and online courses, visit innovationengineering.org.